Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Philbrook Museum of Art is celebrating its 75th anniversary this year. The year was 1938 when Tulsa oil man Waite Phillips announced the donation of his Italianate mansion and 23 acres of ground as an art museum and park for all Tulsans. And since that time, Philbrook has been a continuing focal point for Tulsa's art community. The Diamond Anniversary starts with an exhibition of new and promised gifts to the museum, which opened over the weekend. Collective Future, gifts in honor of Philbrook's 75th anniversary, includes new works by John Singer Sargent, Morris Lewis, the Wyeth family, N.C. Andrew and Jamie Wyeth, Gustave Courbet, Edouard Villard, and Romare Bearden, to name a few. Collective Vision is on display now at the museum through January. Join us to talk about the importance of the new acquisitions and Philbrook's evolution as a cultural institution is the executive director of the museum, Rand Suffolk. He joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Rand Suffolk, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning.
Philbrook's celebrating its 75th anniversary this year. It was 75 years ago that, I guess, Waite Phillips opened up his home to the public. And you're going to be starting off celebrating with an exhibit, and I assume there'll be activities throughout the year. Where is Philbrook on its 75th anniversary?
Well, I think we're in a pretty good place. I think if I was asked to kind of channel Waite Phillips right now, I think he and his wife, Genevieve, would probably be enormously proud at the evolution of this organization, the place that we find ourselves in the lives of the people of this community. I think we're really devoted to doing good work, and I think we're delivering on that mission. And so that's very exciting for us.
Now, one of your big initiatives has been increasing the diversity of the people who come to Philbrook. And I know that you've been very proud of how that has changed. How has that influenced the museum at all?
Well, I'll tell you, we've just tried to make inclusivity a super important component of our DNA. And so that actually is reflected in any number of decisions we make regarding the programming that we do. Even we're going to be talking about acquisitions in a minute, but when we're looking at acquiring new things let me take a step back. It's very important to us that when people come to the museum, regardless of their background, that in some way, shape, or form, to the extent that it's possible, they see part of themselves reflected in their museum. And so we've tried to capture opportunities across the board. So if your children participate in my museum and they're either Hispanic or Latino, those My Museum cards are translated into Espanol. When we're making acquisitions, it's not enough that we go out and acquire works, especially when we're talking about contemporary art, that is done by mid-career artists that have a track record in galleries, have been in some group shows and museums and so forth. Well, you know what? All those things being equal, we try and acquire women artists, African-American artists, Latino artists, and so forth, because we think that's important. We've reinstalled some galleries. For example, we completely reinstalled a few years ago our African collection, and it had been on a lower level. We put it in the upper level of the villa. We completely revisioned that. And while we won't make any assumption that African Americans in our community all love African art, for those perhaps that do, we hope it sent a message that we care about that. And so I think all of these things have really come together. What's exciting for us is for the fourth year in a row now, we've had over 40% minority participation at the museum. And that's really exciting.
Now, Philbrook celebrating its 75th anniversary. We're going to talk a little bit about the show that's up that features a lot of new acquisitions. In fact, the complete Helmer Gallery is full of new acquisitions, which is a great thing for the museum. But where do you see the mission either changing or being more refined in the next 25 years?
Well, I think that the work that we've started to do, it has to continue. We have to figure out how to become increasingly compelling every single day. We have to figure out new ways to connect people with the true work of the organization. We need to put people into contact with exceptional works of art, provocative ideas, and help. Here's the thing. When people come to the museum, hopefully that interaction with complex culture engenders empathy, teaches people to communicate in verbal and nonverbal ways, spurs creativity, all of these things. And if we're just talking about successful 21st century communities, all of these things, whether we're in the classroom, our backyards, or the workplace, these are all important traits for a successful 21st century community. And this is a role that Philbrook can play. And so I think we need to devote ourselves to figuring out how do we make art central to that? How do we figure out different ways to connect people with the work by artists who have a very unique perspective on our contemporary life oftentimes?
It's interesting to see you also mention ideas, because that's been an increasing part of the Philbrook mission on a lot of times your Third Thursday programs. It might be about art, but it's more about ideas, about art and about culture with a small c.
I think it's so important for institutions like ours to do a couple things. One is we have to devote ourselves to the creation of intellectual capital. So creating those programs, developing exhibitions, and so forth. The second thing is we have to figure out ways to enable sustained access to that capital. And then, ultimately, we then have to use that access to become increasingly essential within our community. And so regardless of what happens over the course of the next 25 years, I would imagine that to some degree that's going to be, it needs to be, the focus of this organization.
Now, there's two other areas that Philbrook falls into that is outside the purview of a lot of art museums. One, you have this art museum, but two, it is in a house, so there's an architectural element in which you're treating that space as a part of the art. And then you have the grounds, too, which, again, is another landscape architecture. Are there any plans to put more emphasis on that part of the Philbrook experience?
First of all, it's fantastic, isn't it, that we have all of these sort of arrows in our quill to make you fall in love with
us.
But
it's also hard to sort of narrow your focus to try to serve four masters, if you will.
Well, I don't know that we have to narrow our focus. I think the key is, how do we use each? We're always looking for new gateways to connect people to this institution. And so if the gardens are the thing that make you happy, that's wonderful. It could be the architecture. It could be our new exhibitions and so forth. We're always trying to figure out ways that we can connect, really dovetail our strengths with your interests or your needs. We need to look at that, and we do look at that as great opportunities. So if we're talking about the gardens, how do we protect and enhance that wonderful sense of place, but at the same time make good decisions about activating that space in new ways, whether that's bringing in outside, you know, performing arts groups to do plays, whether that's doing yoga that we do there, you know, in the mornings and so forth, whether that's opening the museum earlier for members so that they can do walks, you know, early in the morning and so forth. How do we, and then the flip side of that is, how do we turn that into an outdoor gallery space? Do we do different kind of installations? Do we acquire different work that goes out and so forth? That's wonderful for us to think about. And so we need to look at each aspect of that. Another, you were talking about the architecture. I think one of the big challenges for us over the next year or so is going to be developing an interpretive plan. Let me put that in, say it a different way. When Wade Phillips and his wife gave this museum to the community, they did not intend for this to be a monument to themselves. They did not leave a huge core collection of objects, all their furniture and so forth, so you could come and learn about the Phillips life there. Now, having said that, it would be naive for us not to appreciate the fact that many of our visitors come to that museum and want to know what was their life like in that building at that time.
Or just the very fact that he's building this Italian terrazzo, Italianate mansion in 1930s Tulsa.
Exactly. And so how do we figure out how to weave that story or make that story more accessible to people when they come to visit the museum? It's a fine line, but certainly with the advent of technology, there will be ways for us to figure out how to put that story in place and allow visitors to tailor or customize their experience in terms of getting that aspect of it. So all of these things that you identified, sure, they're challenges, but they're equally opportunities for us to figure out how to interpret our mission in new and creative ways.
Well, of course, one of the biggest missions of an institution is to capture artwork, to be able to show it to the public. And this exhibition, Collective Future, shows some of the most recent efforts and some of the ongoing efforts in building up the Philbrook collection. What would you say the strengths are that you're actively working on at this particular point?
Well, first, I mean, let me just kind of remind people that presenting the finest examples of artistic achievement that we can get our hands on is the single most important aspect of our mission that we have. And so it's vitally necessary for us to continue to acquire things, not because we're greedy, but because every time we get a new object that comes into the collection, it allows us to comment upon that mission or engage people with that mission in a new way. And we take that very seriously. So this exhibition we put together really for a couple reasons. One was to highlight the fact that our collection is evolving, that we're continually trying to refine it, to fill in gaps, to acquire new things that are going to be exciting and relevant to our community. The second reason was that we wanted to really capture a rallying point to encourage other people to, you know, give to the museum during this time period. And we were very fortunate. We have over 30 donors that have stepped forward and made either outright or promised gifts to the museum. And so what this exhibition does is really take a look at recent gifts from the past 3 years, plus some new things that folks really haven't seen before that ultimately will come to the museum.
You know, you mentioned this is the primary focus, but you have to admit at this particular point in our history, this is a very challenging time to be collecting art, because in every phase of the art market, I mean, there used to be backwaters in the art market. There are no backwaters anymore. Every year there's like major auction records being set. It's increasingly expensive to collect any sort of art.
We have very limited acquisition funds. That's another reason why this is so important for us. And with those acquisitions funds, we have to be as intentional and careful as we possibly can to get the best objects. But that's why creating these kind of relationships with donors, with collectors, is so vital for us. We want them to believe in our mission. We want them to appreciate the work that we're doing. And we want them to ultimately feel that we would be a wonderful future home for that object. And one of the things that we talk about is that given the quality of many of these things, they will always be taken care of from a physical standpoint. But when they come to the museum, we have an opportunity to take care of the spiritual side, the programming that's developed around them, the access that we're able to create with people, and the experience that we're able to deliver.
Well, let's talk about some of the things that are in the show. One important gift comes from the Cowan family, Mrs. Cowan, who gave you a bunch of Wyeth, the whole Wyeth family, the whole Wyeth clan, from N.C. Wyeth, the illustrator, to Andrew Wyeth, to Jamie Wyeth. And there are several examples in the show. One is a standout tempura painting by Andrew Wyeth called A Boarding Party. This is a really first-rate, top-notch Andrew Wyeth.
I don't think there's one thing that she gave us that wasn't first-rate, top-notch, to be honest with you. I mean, that was an astonishing gift.
And her connection to Tulsa was... it wasn't all that strong. I mean, she's lived most of her life up in New England.
Well, she did for the last number of years, but you have to remember she was part of the Tandy family, which was a very important Tulsa family. And so there was a deep connection there. Her husband, in particular, was, I think, a great citizen of Tulsa and did some really wonderful things. And they had supported the museum for decades at one level or another. So regardless of that, this was a fantastic collection to come to the museum. I mean, the Wyeths, as you said, that family is an incredibly important American artistic family, and to get that number of works at the same time at that level of quality was really astonishing for us.
And of course, it has this link to some of your museum's strength, which is American regionalism with Alexander Hoag and the like. And while we don't really think of Wyeth as being a regionalist, he really is a regionalist because he's painting his area and he's painting it in a distinctly American way.
Well, that's true. I think, you know, to kind of go tangentially off of what you're saying, one of the other really important components of this is that when we have these gifts come, or promise gifts are made to the museum, what it does is it gives us some guidance as to how we can collect in the future. Because if we know that we're getting object X, that means we don't have to put resources towards acquiring one. Instead, we can put those resources towards acquiring objects around that to broaden that area and so forth. And that allows us to become, again, much more intentional in terms of the objects we're acquiring.
Now, there was another, I guess it's a promise gift at this point, that does tie into your collection. You have this wonderful Alexander portrait of the woman turning over her shoulder. It is a gorgeous object that's been a part of the Philbrook collection. Now you have the greatest late 19th century portrait painter, a Singer Sargent, a very nice portrait of, I believe it is Mrs. George Mosenthal. Again, the two of those paintings are going to look incredible side by side.
Well, it's, you know, Sargent was certainly one of the finest brushes of his generation. I mean, it's a remarkable addition to the museum when it ultimately comes to us. And if you look at the rest of the collection, you mentioned one painting, but we have a number of significant works. Other early American portraiture and so forth is there, but we also have a small group of British portraiture. And Sargent was one of those key people who was an American, but spent most of his time painting in Britain, so to speak. A lot of Americans at the time didn't consider him to be a true American painter. They thought he was more of a European painter because of that. But he's one of those great bridges between both of those things. And the quality is certainly there. That's an exciting work.
Yeah. The exhibit is split into your four major collecting areas: European painting, American painting, Native American art, and contemporary art. And when you walk in the gallery, the very first thing you see is a fairly good-sized French neoclassical painting from the late 18th century by Van Bray. I didn't know this name, but it's a very good example of those sort of classical themes being recycled there right at the end of the 1700s.
That is an exceptional work and a key acquisition for us because, again, this is an area we simply don't have much, if anything, to represent the importance of neoclassical art during that time period. And this work exemplifies that in so many ways. So beyond just being a fantastic aesthetic experience in terms of just looking at it and loving it, that is a great teaching opportunity for us. I mean, that will be wrapped into docent tours, educational programs, and the like.
And it also becomes this sort of bridge between one of your core holdings, which is the French academic paintings of the 19th century.
Absolutely.
Because this is what informs all of that, all of the Bouguereaus and everything that happens in the 19th century.
And not only that, but because of the neoclassical character of it, you can also use it to look back even further to some of the Renaissance works in the Kress collection and so forth. So again, another important bridge material.
My guest today is Rand Selfick, the executive director of the Philbrook Museum of Art. Philbrook is turning 75. The Collective Future, Gifts in Honor of Philbrook's 75th Anniversary, opened over the weekend. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa to talk about the 75th anniversary and what's going to be happening in the next 75 years, or at least the next 10 or 20 years while Rand's at the helm. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Mainly, we're talking about the exhibit, which features, the European painting is a difficult place to collect in at this point. The market is crazy, and the numbers are crazy, but you're adding some things, some works on paper. I know there's a very little, but it's a little charming little street scene by Manet that's
sure.
Part. There's also a very nice Courbet. I believe it is a gorge painting. This is a very nice acquisition.
It's a great work. It's also very exemplary of his style, and he painted these kinds of landscapes time and again. And so from that standpoint, it's a very demonstrative example of the kind of work he was doing. I really should pause just for emphasis sake and kind of make sure that you understand how much gratitude we have for all of the donors that have certainly made this happen. It would not have happened. I mean, there's simply, as you said, there's no way that this institution could have gone out and simply acquired all of these things by writing a check. We don't have the resources, and it's just so difficult to find them. And so for these donors to have the confidence that they do in this institution and to be willing to donate to us in this fashion it's incredibly generous, and we're very grateful.
And for this exhibition, since some of these are promise gifts, these are coming out of their homes.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, these people still love these objects. They still want to live with them and so forth. So we're very grateful.
Well, moving on to the American section, we mentioned the Wyeth gift, which is also important. A couple of the things in the show we actually saw at Philbrook downtown earlier this year. And there, again, you were talking about inclusivity, a couple of Southwestern women painters. And that is Margaret LaFranc and Barbara Latham, who both had these objects in the show downtown. But they're very nice. And they're also showcasing the fact that, you know, we've always had women artists. They didn't get their due for a long time, and they did incredible work. And both of these paintings are wonderful, wonderful pieces.
They're great additions as well. And one of the things that Philbrook has quietly but, again, intentionally been doing over the last number of years is really extending our commitment to women artists. If you look at, especially when the Adkins collection came, we were talking about the Southwestern component of the Adkins. We made a large commitment to acquiring women artists in depth. And so these are two additions that fold right into that and kind of help us build strength on strength in that area. And even the exhibition, as you saw, perhaps our opening exhibition downtown in one of our smaller galleries, Signs of the Southwest, is really focusing on these women. And one of the objects that you mentioned was included in that exhibition, and the lender, I think, was so pleased with the work that we're doing and our focus right now that he ultimately and very generously decided just to give us that work. So fantastic.
Mm. Yeah. Also in the American section, there is a Leon Kroll, the Gay Bridge, which it's very nice. It's very Ashcan. It's a great addition because I don't think there are, I mean, you have some Robert Henribe, but that's his Native American work. And so that's an important addition just to showcase the Ashcan school.
Well, you know, he's a happy Ashcan painter if he is.
Yes,
because
yes.
That's a beautiful painting. I don't want people to think that this is a dour.
Gritty.
Yeah, any kind of gritty scene. It's a beautiful scene, actually, a wonderful painting. But that was an exciting surprise for us.
Also, a couple of Southwestern pieces. Emil Bistrom, who's a major figure in the Taos School. Is there any Bistrom in the Atkins collection? Do you know?
That I can't answer.
Sorry. Well, but anyway, this is a wonderful late Bistrom, which is more abstract, but it's this very beautiful fall scene. It's a perfect time to be seeing a painting like this, and that's a new gift. Also, there's a Wolf Kahn, a very large Wolf Kahn that is also a part of the collection.
And that's a painting that's been in this community for a long time, and we were so excited that the family decided ultimately to pledge that to Philbrook.
When we think of the Native American collections, we think of that being one of the core and most important Philbrook holdings, but as becomes apparent, you're still adding to it. There was a little piece from the Martinez family, some wonderful Ildefonso Pueblo pottery, some Hopi, and I believe it's Apache reed work, and as well as a lot of visual arts and paintings as well that are still being added to the collection.
For Philbrook, our Native American collection, I mean, we've said this many times, but it's worth saying again, we literally have one of the finest surveys of 20th century Native American material anywhere. And so our ability, again, to build strength on that area is important. But outside of just the accumulation of those objects, we've now devoted ourselves to, again, building a different kind of intellectual framework around that. With the opening of the Atkins Study Center downtown, what we really were trying to do is capture an opportunity. We've got this incredible collection. We've got within the Atkins material came with a mountain of archival material of great significance. And then within our existing at the Chapman Library at the museum itself, there were some special collections like the Lawson Library of about 1,100 volumes of rare and out-of-print publications devoted to Native American material. We've got great oral histories. There's some wonderful photography. The goal with that was, okay, how do we pull all those together, marry that with a robust research agenda, and ultimately reposition Philbrook at the forefront of the dialogue regarding Native American art and culture? So acquiring works in that area is important for any number of reasons.
My guest today is Rand Suffolk. Philbrook Museum of Art is celebrating their 75th anniversary with an exhibition titled Collective Future, Gifts in Honor of Philbrook's 75th Anniversary. It opened up over the weekend and is on display. And it features some collecting and ongoing collecting efforts in all the major areas of Philbrook's collection. And contemporary continues to be that. And one of the big, wonderful pieces is a really large painting by Morris Lewis, who was one of the first color field painters. And this is very different because we think of Morris Lewis as being this sort of rainbow. And this is a very muted, it's almost like he's darkened down all these pigments to a very dark level, but it's a very interesting piece, and it's very different from what he usually does.
That ultimately will be a signature work at Philbrook. That is clearly a gift that we could never touch from a financial standpoint, and it's simply through the generosity of this family that we're able to have it there. It's also very important to us because we actually have another Lewis painting in our collection, but it's very early. And if you go downtown right now, it's on display. And it's interesting to see how he evolved, you know, this wonderful painting from the beginning of his career and then from his mature style much later. So again, that was a very important acquisition.
And that's one of the most important things a museum can do is show how an artist evolved over time, to see a mature work versus an early work, to see, oh, this is the path this artist took.
It's fascinating to see how they developed their own sort of vocabulary, their visual vocabulary. You know, what did they kind of commit themselves to? What did they edit out? And how that evolution happened, for sure.
Yeah. Also, the collection of decorative art as well and furniture and the like continues. So there's an Eero Saarinen chair, as well as a really interesting chair by Gaetano Pesci, which is this plastic, almost see-through plastic chair. It's really a cool acquisition.
Well, you know, we still are maintaining this wonderful relationship with the Vitra Design Museum. Design as a field, I think, is wonderful material. It connects. It's very accessible. People can connect to it on any number of ways. I mean, everybody knows what a chair is. I mean, who's afraid of a chair? But it can help push boundaries for people, maybe get them out of their comfort area. And it also is a great gateway into other forms of contemporary art.
Yeah. There's also some wonderful pictures by Victor Schreckengast. They're very classic, but these are the Jiffyware little pictures from the 30s that some people might actually remember, and now all of a sudden it's being showcased in a museum.
Well, you know, when we were fortunate enough to have some of the George R. Kravis II collection at the museum for a while, and we would walk into that gallery, and I tell you, time and again, there would be these wonderful objects, and I would overhear people saying things such as, "I told you we never should have put that in that garage sale," or, you know, they would remember seeing it at their grandmother's house. And again, there was that automatic connection to so many of these things.
Well, the exhibit is wonderful. Collective Future on display at the Philbrook Museum. You're starting the 75th year. Obviously, this is a time of reflection, but it's also probably a time of planning for the future. How is you and the board going? How are you and the board going through this process as far as figuring out a future for the institution for the next 10 to 25 years?
Well, we're just wrapping up the final year of a 3-year strategic plan. And so probably late winter, early spring, we'll be diving into a new process. And I think one of this does provide us with a moment to really do some soul searching and to say, okay, what is it that's made this institution successful, increasingly essential? What's made us exceptional as well? And focus on those things. And so certainly starting off with a focus on the artwork is really important because that's our number one thing. But then I think we're really going to be looking at the people again, whether it's the people that have volunteered at the institution, that work there, our donors, our members. You know, how are we going to do a better job engaging those folks, taking care of those people, providing, you know, meeting the tenets of our mission from an educational and aesthetic standpoint for those folks. Because if you look back at our 75th, as a staff, we've been planning really a year-long celebration in some respects. And it's so fantastic to see. The only reason this place exists is because of the contributions of so many individuals, so many angels that have stepped forward with their time, with their energy, with their expertise, with their resources, and just made huge investments, large and small, that have propelled this organization forward. And so we need to, again, be, I think, very mindful, regardless of what that future looks like, that we're paying attention to the people, because that's super important.
All right. Well, we wish you great success during the 75th anniversary year. Now with two facilities, the Philbrook downtown, has that met the institution's expectations?
I think it has. We weren't entirely sure what to anticipate, but since opening late June, we've seen, I think, well over 12,000 people down there. It's just so exciting to be a part of the energy that's down in the Arts District right now. And that has provided us with a differently beautiful but wonderful new dimension to Philbrook. Again, a different gateway to connect to people. If our Midtown space doesn't necessarily make you happy, boy, go downtown. It's a differently beautiful but wonderful experience that might grab you also.
All right. Well, Rand, we appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
The executive director of the Philbrook Museum of Art, Rand Suffolk, speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. Philbrook is celebrating its 75th anniversary this year, and the anniversary year begins with a new exhibition, Collective Future, Gifts in Honor of Philbrook's 75th Anniversary, which is on display through January at the Philbrook Villa. For more information on Philbrook's 75th anniversary, visit their website at philbrook.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed one of our recent programs, they're available online anytime at publicradiotulsa.org. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.